This is an oral history interview with Linda Mullen by Janet Grossbach. Okay, Linda, when did your family come to us?
Well, starting with my grandpa on my dad's side, he came up on a whaling ship and met my grandma, and they got married and settled in a frog neck. As far as I know, that may not be true, but as far as I know, that's what happened.
And your grandpa came up on a whaling ship from where?
The East Coast. I think he's Irish, full-blooded Irishman.
Oh, okay.
So he came up then.
Okay, so your dad's family then?
It's Irish.
It's Irish and came from south up to a fog neck.
Yeah. And my grandpa, my dad's dad, or his father came across from Ireland. And we don't have a good history because we don't know where grandpa was raised or anything. He died when he was young. And my dad was 19, I think.
Mm-hmm. So what year was it? Do you know approximately when your grandfather got up here?
No. My one sister does, what is it called? Genealogy.
Oh, yeah.
And she has more information than I do, but she cannot find my grandpa's on my dad's side.
So he came to a fog neck on a whaling ship, and then met your mother there. Was she already
my
there?
Grandmother.
Or your grandmother?
My dad's mother there. She was raised there, I guess.
Was she born on the fog neck, as far as you know?
As far as I know.
Okay.
Well, my dad met.
And he, so they married then at a fog neck?
Uh-huh.
And he stayed there and fished, I assume, or
probably whaled and fished and whatnot.
So your dad was born on a fog neck?
My dad was.
Okay, and your mother?
A fog neck.
A fog neck. And is she full Aleut or?
Aleut Russian.
Aleut Russian, okay. Okay, and then they got married, you know, approximately when they got married?
My mother and father?
Mm-hmm.
I think it'll be 48 years they've been married.
Okay, and they don't still live on the farm, right? They're
no,
in Kodiak.
They were in Fort Lyons, they moved to Fort Lyons after the tidal wave, and then they live here in Kodiak.
So, your dad was raised in a fog neck and fished? So were you born then?
No, I was
in
born
a fog
in the old hospital here, and we lived here in Kodiak, back and forth, until I was in first or second grade, I don't remember, and then we were in the village until I graduated from the eighth grade.
Okay, so you were born here and lived part of the time here and part of the time here.
I can remember going to kindergarten here, and I can remember living out the road going to the base where we were when I was a little girl. And then that's about all I remember from there.
So most of your memories growing up are from the fog neck?
From the fog neck.
And
I can remember my mother telling me that the year I was born, right before Christmas, in 47. So she asked the doctor, who was Dr. Bob.
Mm-hmm.
Doctor, not this Dr. Bob, but the old man.
Oh, his father.
His father. She asked him if she could go home for Christmas, and he said, only if your husband carries you up the stairs to your house, and he'd lay right on the couch. Well, I was born 8 days before Christmas.
Oh.
And she asked Dad to go get the tree and decorate the tree. Well, the tiny tree was found on the table, and it was just a big ornament. There's four of them. Joined the army. Him and my uncles, a lot of guys from the village, joined the army, and he wanted to be sent overseas. Well, Alaska's overseas. He was sent down the chain. He was on one of the islands in the chain, and that's where he learned to drive. He ran a fire truck out there.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
Oh, so you don't know which island it was?
No.
Have you, has he told you any stories about what it was like?
No.
World War II on the chain?
I don't even think he was around where they fought. Because he was just in the fire department. I don't really think so. He doesn't give as much of his history.
Mm-hmm. So while, and were any of your children born when during that time or not? Are you the oldest?
No, I have. There's three older than mine.
Okay, so then I think the war ended, what, in 45? So
45, and I have a sister in 45, so there was one older brother.
Tell me about growing up in a farm now.
Well, I enjoyed it. It was fun. Hard work, but fun too. Didn't have running water, of course, unless he ran down to the creek and got it. He came running back with it. We didn't have bathtubs or showers, and we didn't have toilets, of course. We had a little honey bucket that sat in the closet behind the curtain, and we used that and emptied it in the morning. And we had an outhouse, and what we used for bathing was a steam bath.
Banya?
A banya. Yeah, we called them banya. But we didn't have one in our yard by our house, so we had to walk to our grandma's. And a fog net was sort of split up, and we lived. When I first can start remembering, we lived in what was called the church house. It was built for when the priests came to the village, and it was right in the churchyard.
Mm-hmm.
So we lived right by the church. Fred can't see my expression in my hands and hands and things. But we used to live there. We had a wood stove there for heat, so I can remember carrying in wood. And then my dad bought this bigger house because there's so many of us kids. And we moved to this big house, and it sort of was right in the center of the village where there was Aleutown, where my grandma lived. And there was another big part of town where the store was, and all my relatives lived along there. It's about 3 miles long. So we were right in the center of it. So we used to walk to my grandma's. I don't know where we went from the church house when I was little to watch, but we used to go to my grandma's, and that was about a mile walk.
Every day?
No. We only washed once a week, Chad.
Oh.
We were not very clean.
We had to walk a mile, man.
Yeah, and it would be nighttime, because I remember there was an old graveyard on one side of the road, and on the other side of the road was the beach, and my mother never swatted our flashlight right on the road, always in the graveyard at the beach, and I was scared. But Bonnack was a spooky village. They had a lot of, they told us stories, the old timers used to tell us stories, and my father didn't allow people to tell us stories in the house because he didn't want us growing up scared of the dark.
What kind of stories?
Like, they tell us about these little oolocks, they call them oolocks, they were little hairy guys, you know, they just had 2 feet. You know, arms,
yeah.
But they're little short hairy guys that ran around in the woods, and they used to hang around above the school, you know, we'd go to the school, and a fog neck used to be a fog neck territory of Florida. It became a state.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, but they said, don't go up in the woods there and play because there's a oolock up there, and it's sort of scary night time too. We're going to ground, she lives by the oolock woods there.
So they were little hairy
guys. I never saw one, but this, the old time,
they believed that these were
real things.
Real
yeah.
Things.
And I don't know about them. And they'd say if you're walking alone at night time, you could hear footsteps, people following you. So Mom's favorite thing when we're going to Banya, she'd be loitering along, checking everything out, and I'd be scared. I'd be scared all these little people would be following me, and then I'd be wanting to run home.
So that they sounds like they might have disciplined the kids with the use of the threat of these oolocks.
I guess so, and all these other scary little things, and also that people, and I think this is mostly alcohol involved, people would hear voices or somebody calling them, and they would follow the voice, you know, where they would hear it, they'd go to the voice, and actually it was just nothing, and they'd wake up and they'd be out in the middle of the woods or wherever, just to follow that voice. So a fog net was really spooky.
Mm-hmm.
Very
spooky. And you think it was alcohol related? Was there a lot of alcohol in the
dad and then my grandparents said there was no alcohol except for once a year after the salmon season was over. And they had, we used to have a potato garden that each house used to have, if they did, their own vegetable gardens. We used to have. They said the only time they ever had alcohol is they made their own. And this was long, long time ago, before my time, was after the fishing season. The gardens were in there. They had a big party, a big dance and whatnot. Mm. And they had home food. But then when the Russians came, that's when alcohol was introduced more frequently. And most of the neighbors didn't use it that much. They were too busy.
Mm-hmm.
Bureau of Indian Affairs, and I guess they were just to supplement our diet because we didn't get enough milk. They tasted just like malted milk balls do nowadays, and we were supposed to take one a day or two a day or something, I don't remember, but I usually managed to eat my whole bottle by the time I got home from school because they were so good. But those were good memories back then.
So you went grade one through, or you spent first couple of grades here, and then you spent until eighth grade in Afognak.
Yeah, I graduated from eighth grade in Afognak, and in fact, we got a classroom for graduation, and I still have mine.
From eighth grade.
Mm-hmm.
And then where did you go? Where did most of the village kids go for?
If they wanted to go on to high school, they went away to government school, and what the government did was send you papers to tell you where you're going to school. It was either Wrangell, Alaska, Mount Edgecombe, which is down across from Sitka, or Chamawa, Oregon. And for some reason, I don't know how they decided who was going where, but I went to Mamechka, and I had an older brother. He's a year older than I am, and he went to the same school. And we were sent away in the end of August or September, whichever day they decided we needed to go, and we stayed in school until it was over in the springtime, so we came back home in May.
So it was like a boarding school?
It was actually what it was. Mount Edgecombe is a little island, and it was an old army or navy base. And where we lived was in the barracks, the old barracks, but they had redone them, so there was eight of us girls in one little room. I don't know, feet or anything, but it wasn't very big, and they had four bunks. So we were in there, and we had to share dressers and whatnot, and it was real regimental, and I think that's where I have to do everything just so. And we had to get up early in the morning, and a whole bunch of us would get in the showers at the same time. They had a whole bunch of showers in a row. So we'd get up and we'd do that, and we had to make our beds just perfectly. Our bunks had to be made perfectly. Everything had to be in order, or else we'd get punished, or we couldn't go across to Sitka and shop, or couldn't go to activities and all. And we had our classrooms, and those were all in, like, some of my classes were in hangars, old airplane hangars, upstairs, and they had the shops below them, like they had mechanic shops and whatnot for the guys. Back then, girls didn't do that much of the guy stuff. And some of my classes were just in the old office buildings and all, where they had offices and all.
And that was through 12th grade?
No, it was real segregated there. It was just natives from all over the state of Alaska, which is nice now, because if I go to some big doing, native doing or something, I know a lot of people. But at that time, I didn't like it, because we were segregated, and we were allowed to go across to town, which was a ferry at that time. They didn't have a bridge built then, if you behaved yourself and didn't get into trouble. And of course, I got into trouble because I'm so mischievous anyway, but I'd get up on my top bunk and be dancing. And after everybody went to sleep, I'd be up dancing with my girlfriend or something. So I was constantly getting into trouble. And they had a dorm council for us, and it was sort of nice. We had to stand in line for a long time. We had great big lines. We had to stand in line, and we ate in this great big, what was the dining hall in the barracks for the guys when they were in the army. So it just had great big long tables with the benches that were attached to them and all, and we ate institution food. It wasn't very good food. I know I went up two sizes in my first year in high school. And we stayed down there the whole year, and I didn't like it because we were so segregated. It was all natives. So my sophomore year, towards the end, I told my dad that I wouldn't go back there. I said, I think we're going to drop out of school, or he had to send me someplace else. And at that time, they didn't have a boarding program here in Kodiak where you could stay in a dorm here in Kodiak. And we did have relatives, but Dad didn't want me to stay with relatives here in town. But what he did was enroll me in Sheldon Jackson. Sheldon Jackson is a junior college now. Back then it was a high school and a junior college. So my last 2 years of high school, I went to Sheldon Jackson.
Where is Sheldon Jackson?
It's right across from Mount Edgecombe. It's across in Sitka itself. And it's a private, it was a Presbyterian school. Much smaller than Mount Edgecombe. Mount Edgecombe had a lot of students.
And not segregated.
And it was not segregated. There was kids from stateside and from all over the state. There was white, there was black, you know. A smaller school and a lot more fun. Everybody got along. And of course there was a popular group and all this. But if you went to a dance, everybody danced, and we just had fun. We started our day off in chapel, and we had chores to do. We had to work in the kitchen to keep our rooms clean and everything. But it was a lot more fun than Mount Edgecombe.
Do you think, was a great majority of the Native kids going to the designated Native schools? Were you the exception?
No, we didn't have a choice. They went to the government schools, or else they came, you know, to the city.
And city being Kodiak?
Kodiak, or else if you were away from, you know, Anchorage or wherever. Mm-hmm. The biggest city that was closest to your village, but I don't know.
But most of the village children did go on past 8th grade.
No.
No, most of them quit it.
Yeah. Their parents didn't want them to go. I know my sister didn't, my oldest sister didn't get to go because mom was expecting another baby and dad had her stay home and help mom. And I think that happened a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So, about the time, there was a lot of older kids that went, but not that many. It wasn't, education wasn't pushed that much because they were needed.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel about the fact that a lot of the Native children are now, today, are encouraged to go out of their village, get educated, get jobs, and there's a big move of the Native children moving out of the villages. How do you feel about that? Do you feel that that's a good thing, or do you feel that most of them are coming back and putting back into their villages, or do you have any feelings on that?
Here on Kodiak, there's such a big difference between the mainland natives and us down here. We have a lot more money down here, and most of our villages now have running water, they have electricity, and they're like little cities. And most of the kids that do leave the villages, and here in Kodiak also the natives leave, and it seems like they're not finishing their education. There's still not a great majority of them that leave and then do something, get educated, and can apply it.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the guys that grow up around here can make money fishing, so they think, why go on? And I find that their parents think the same way, so they're not pushed to go to school.
Mm-hmm.
So there is quite a drop off there, the number of Native kids, even in high school. They struggle to get through high school. Go on, most of them, a lot of them come back.
Mm-hmm. So were you away at school then when the earthquake, the tsunami earthquake of 64 hit?
Uh-huh. I was at a dance the night it hit, and they let us know, and I remember we all had to go home from the dance. I was out at Monashkin at the time, that was in 64, and it was my sophomore year, and we all had to go home and listen to the news and see what was happening. I was really scared because I heard that Kodiak Island had sunk, so there was my whole family. And then my family had heard that we had a lot of damage down there, and the phones were out, so we couldn't communicate back and forth. And it wasn't until a few days later that my folks called and said they were all right, and to find out and make sure we were okay.
Were your folks in a Fognak village in
that? No. My sophomore year, my folks moved from a Fognak up to Fort Wakefield. And Fort Wakefield was a little tiny town. It was a cannery town.
Mm-hmm.
Fort Wakefield Cannery. And there was about 70 people living there.
But on Fognak?
No.
No.
I don't know which island it's on. But anyway, they were living there when the earthquake hit. I know my dad's boat was tied up by the dock, and he had my oldest brother take the boat out. Him and the guy took the boat out towards the middle so the wave wouldn't hurt the boat. And dad and mom and whichever kids were home, there was three little ones at home then. And the rest of the people from Port Wakefield went underneath the dam. So that if the earthquake bust the dam, they would have been gone by the dam water busting rather than the tidal wave.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But the house in a Fognak, I've been back to a Fognak a couple times. Our house is just being washed away by the water now, and the graveyard behind us is washed away. Because most of our houses were right along the beach.
Right.
So
are they doing anything to preserve what's in the graveyard, the remains that are in the graveyard?
No, there's nothing being done. Also the church, I was real disappointed when I was there one time. I went walking through the church, it's a Russian Orthodox church, and somebody had set up a little camp in there. They had a little
This is the original site.
Uh-huh.
And then they moved it to Fort Lyons.
They moved it to Fort Lyons. I can remember the year I graduated from high school, which was 66. Going back, and we were still in Port Wakefield. In Port Wakefield, the water just came up in the cannery. When the people were working in the cannery, there'd be like high tide, there'd be a foot of hot, foot of water in the cannery. So they relocated both Port Wakefield with Port Lyons.
Ooh.
So part of Port Lyons is Port Lyons, and you go across a bridge. There used to be a bridge. Now they have a road all the way around, and it's called Port Wakefield site.
Ooh.
And it was in 1966 that they moved Port Wakefield, the homes from Port Wakefield down. They took them on boats down to Port Lyons.
And your family relocated in Port
Lyons? Yeah, we had a house built. So when we relocated to Port Lyons, I know the Mennonites from Pennsylvania, I think, came up and helped build houses. And there's government houses. There's two different types of houses there in Fort Lyons. Actually, three now, because they've added a lot more houses to the village. And it's not a village anymore. We have running water, and we have electricity, and it's just like a little tiny city now. We have a tribal council and a city council, and we never had that in the Fog Neck. In the Fog Neck, if our roads needed repaired, all the guys that had trucks got together and they went to the beach, filled their trucks with gravel, and went and filled their potholes. So it was more of a community, more fun.
Mm-hmm. More closely knit?
Yeah, closeness in the Fog Neck. Everybody got along. And in Port Lyons, it's getting cliquish and people don't visit. I can remember in the Fog Neck, every weekend we had to clean our house, and one of us girls had to bake bread, and the other girl had to bake pies or cakes or whatever for Sunday, because after church and in the afternoons, people used to visit back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember my parents playing a lot of pinochle. Most everybody in the village played pinochle, and they'd get together wintertime and play pinochle and just have a lot of fun. My family used to play Chinese checkers and cards, and you did more things as a family.
Mm-hmm.
You went out fishing as a family, and summertime the guys would all be out commercial fishing, and the girls and women and the older men would be home, and we'd fish right off the beaches in the Fog Neck for subsistence, what they call it now. And so we'd be home alone. Never saw any bears either.
Never.
And what the men did before they started fishing was they'd go out, and if there was bears around, they'd shoot them. Christmas was always a big thing, too. The school had a great big program. All of the classes got together, and we put on one big program. And the families, if we were interchanging gifts among the villagers, our two other relatives, we would bring those gifts, and that's when we'd teakle, or we'd walk across the lake from our house. This was after we moved to the bigger house. We would all have our program there. Kids, I can remember singing All I Want for Christmas is My Two Front Teeth, and I always say if I knew Santa was going to bring me such big teeth, I wouldn't have sang the song. But I can remember that, and another play we had was we would talk to Santa in the North Pole, and I think I must have been the bossiest kid in school because I had to be the radio operator calling Santa and telling him what we all wanted. And we would exchange gifts. We'd have Christmas carols too, and there'd be a big tree with all the gifts for the villagers that they were exchanging, and we really enjoyed that. It's something to look forward to.
So Santa was a part of the village life.
Santa would come. I don't know where he came from. Probably the North Pole.
Probably.
Yeah. But another thing too I remember is when spring came, we would play a game called Lapture. It's like baseball, but we had two teams, and we would choose team members and take turns batting and run from one base and back to the other one, and except you would get hit with the ball. If you were hit with the ball, you were out. And that was our baseball. We'd play Lapture. And in school, we'd play golf using a baseball bat and a baseball, and we'd just go to clumps of grass or find a little hole or something, but that would be our baseball.
golf. And we played their base. You'd have two different bases with two different prisons. And if you were caught, you had to go to prison. We always loved that. And before the tidal wave in Afghanistan, there used to be a big sandbar. There used to be razor plants too, but after the tidal wave, that's gone. But we used to go down there and play their base when the tide was low. It was just all just nice sand. I remember playing a game with the priests when we lived in the church house called Potichka. And everybody would hide and one person would pound on a tree or a bench or whatever. And I remember the priest doing this. I don't know which priest it was. And if you found somebody, you'd have to run back to the base and grab the stick that whoever had. And you'd yell, Potichka, Potichka, I found so-and-so. I don't know what Potichka means, but it was a fun game. We did a lot of fun family things.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no alcohol. Of course, my folks didn't drink, so there was no alcohol involved when I was growing up. There may have been in the other homes, but not in mine. So I was lucky. They're lucky.
Yeah. Were the homes close together like they are here?
No. Spread out. You had to walk. Mm-hmm. Like, walking to the store was probably a mile and a half, and I know almost every day after school, one of us would have to go to the store, and the other one would have to stay home and fix potatoes. We always had potatoes for dinner.
Mm-hmm. And you grew your own potatoes?
Yeah, we had our own potato gardens. People got together and grew their own potatoes. We had one big garden together, and we had a garden with vegetables in the backyard.
Now, you were telling me earlier about the shamans.
We called them shamans, and supposedly they were the ones that gave us our medical treatment, or they could be bad, and they could but the shamans were either good, they could treat you medically, help you heal and all, and they did use grasses and leaves and whatever berries from the village for that. But some of them could put a spell on you and would harm people if they had something against the person, they would do that. And the only thing I can really remember about them is there's this one big log in Aleutown on the beach that supposedly was shaman. And when we had big windstorms and the tide came way up, that log never moved. I've never gone back and checked to see if that log was still there or not.
Did anybody ever try to move it?
I think we must have when we were kids.
It's
sort of scary, but that's the only thing I can remember about them, that there was. And I know there's one guy in the village in Fort Anka that supposedly was learning to be a shaman, but never finished.
Did you personally know any shaman when you were growing up?
No. Uh-uh.
Or see him?
Because we had Dr. Bob and, you know, Old Man Johnson here, and then we had doctors, so we didn't do such.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do remember one thing when there would be a ship, and I don't remember the name of it, that would come around every year, and we would have to go out on the ship and have x-rays taken and skin tests, and if you were having problems at the time, we would have those taken care of, you could see a doctor, and we also had dental and stuff like that.
On the ship?
On the ship. And then later on, they would have, like they do now, they'd have doctors that came along to the village every so often. But it was sort of fun going up, because sometimes the weather would be pretty bad and you'd be scared.
Yeah.
And that's how we got our groceries in too, is we order groceries from Seattle by the case lot, and they'd be brought in by ship.
So you couldn't go down to the store and buy your groceries then?
You could, but they didn't have, you know, enough of everything. And we always made our own bread and all that. But they didn't have a lot, so we would order. I know my mom and dad would every fall, they'd make all the people for the winter to have canned vegetables and canned fruits, corned beef, and there was roast beef in a can that had gravy in it.
Was it good?
Yeah, I liked it. We ate a lot of fish though. Canned fish, pickled fish, smoked fish, we ate a lot of fish.
still using evaporated milk to put in fruit. If I'm having peaches or something, I use evaporated milk, and I prefer evaporated milk for my coffee, but that's because I grew up with it over fresh milk or fresh cream.
So you either went by sled to school. I assume there were no vehicles, cars, snow machines. How did the village get around other than sled?
Well, we walked, you know, summertime and all, springtime when there was no ice, we walked. And as I got older, I know my dad had a truck and then another guy had a truck. So there was a few trucks in the village, but otherwise we walked. And I can remember one time, I used to be real scared of this one dock, so I'd always go on the beach in this one winter. Plus it was easier to walk on the beach wintertime because the tide would go in and out and it would leave just gravel instead of having to walk through snow or ice. And I had this fake fur brown coat, it was ugly, brown coat I was wearing, and I was walking along the beach so I wouldn't have to pass this dog, and the dog saw me and came down and bit me. I got a big bite on my leg, and I can remember it was wintertime, it was cold, and my dad was in what we called back bay checking the boat, and mom had gone with him just for the walk, which was 3 miles, I think, round trip. And they got home, my older sister and brother were at the house, and one of them went to get my aunt to take care of me because my leg was bleeding a lot, and mom and dad got home. And in fact, the other day I was asking dad, did you take me on a sled? Or did you carry me all the way back? Because him and mom had to walk all the way to Back Bay again. And we had to row out to the boat and then come into Kodiak, which was 3.5-4 hours back in those days. And it was blowing a good northeaster then. And I remember being more scared of the boat flipping over and drowning than I was of my leg, you know, bleeding or anything. Mm-hmm. But we did make it into town.
So people generally came into town, into Kodiak, for their medical.
For medical care when, as I grew up, you know, I had a concussion one time and they brought me on a stretcher on a plane that time. And we used to come in for a dental work later on after the ship quit coming.
Mm-hmm.
We'd have to come into town. And we came into shop and come in for a movie if there was a real good movie out.
Okay, so you graduated from high school in Sitka, and then did you go on, or did you come back to Kodiak or the village, or what did you do?
Well, I went to Western Washington State College, and this is sort of funny because my dad had told me that if I did good in college, he would pay all my expenses for me. But if I flunked, that I was on my own. So naturally, being the first time out of the state, being actually on my own without somebody not telling me what to do, I flunked all my classes except speech and swimming. And went home for Christmas, the first time in 4 years I was home for Christmas. And went back to the States. I had an older sister living down in Utah, so I hopped in a bus from Seattle and went down to Utah. Stayed with her, went to Brigham Young for a semester. Then I went back home. I stayed home just until January, from May until January, and it had been the first time I'd been home for a winter since I left for Mount Edgecombe when I was 14. And I got real bored with that. All we did was party, or just you could go visit and play cards. I did a lot of that, and we used to play cards till 6, 7 in the morning, on and on and on, marathon games. So I got accepted down into Haskell. It's a junior college, Indian junior college, all Indian boarding school down in Kansas. So what they do is the government would fly you down to Seattle. And the first year I flew down to Kansas City and took a bus to Lawrence. But after that, we had to take a bus from Seattle because it was cheaper. So it was like a 3-day bus ride from Seattle to Lawrence, Kansas. And I was taking sewing down there, and I'd sewed ever since I was a little girl all the time growing up. So the home, one of my teachers told me to try nursing. So I tried that, and that was more challenging, more interesting. So I got my license, practical nurse, my license down there.
But our program was 2 years, and I asked one of my instructors, I said, well, how come we have to go 2 years? And I know the program up in Anchorage and other places is only 1 year for Alpian. And she said, well, it's because you Indians are dumber than white people. So she got me a little upset, so I tried really hard, and I did well in school. And since then, I've been back at Coast. You know, I worked in Anchorage, worked stateside, and then 10 years ago, I came back home, and I've been working here. And there's been a lot of changes. Kodiak used to be really small, and I remember having a variety store, and we used to have a soda fountain, or whatever you want to call it. It was called the Polar Bear, and you could sit down and at a booth or up at the counter and order hamburgers or order a banana split or whatever you want to at the variety store. And of course we had crafts, and I remember there was a store right on the dock down where the ferry dock is now. It's all been rebuilt since the tidal wave. Had a store called Knutson's, a theater.
Same theater we have here?
No, it's a different one, and I don't remember where it was. And we used to have a bus system, because we used to be able to get on a bus and go to school, or go through town, or go along Mission Road or something. We no longer have that. But it was prettier. It was a nice old town before the tidal wave. So there's really been a lot of changes. Kodiak is just another big city to me now. Small to most of you, but it's a big city.
Well, I want to thank you, Linda, for allowing me the interview. It's been real enjoyable.
It has.